Hey everybody, welcome back to Fantasy Movie Mashup, the Game of Thrones, Episode 4.
The Last of the Starks, if I'm not mistaken.
So overall, this was a really good leading up episode. It was an episode that, you know, we just had the big war, and now we're setting up for the battle against Cersei. We got to see two big deaths. You got to see Rhaegal, Jon's dragon, get taken down. So, legitimately, those spear guns, they kill everything. So, what's the point? And first of all, how are these spear guns that they're using, how are they so fast to reload? Because they show people put the thing on the...
Yeah, like... This is going to spearhead into some of my qualms with the season, not the episodes. Like, I actually don't have issues with the episodes. I just have an overarching fear of what the season will be. It has to tie in with plot progression and rationing of characters. So this episode really sent that home. We finished episode 3, which is The Longest Night. And we all left it wondering, why did the number of characters that survived that battle kind of left us wondering, okay, well, you know, are they going to be food for fodder later on? Which this episode goes to show that, like, Rhaegal almost dies in The Longest Night to then be killed within, 20, 30 minutes of this next episode. And this is part of my issue, is that when the Night King brought down Viserion, I was like, okay, great. I mean, the Night King, he's got magical powers, this, that, or the other. It makes sense. And I know, I want to say in the previous season, they kind of talked about this folklore, about the spear, this, that, or the other. But I mean, what's the point of having a magical dragon if just a spear, which for all, they never, it's not like dragon glass or anything like that, if I'm not mistaken. I might have to go back in episodes, and I'm sure people who listen will point out something that I'm grossly overlooking. But yeah, the weapon doesn't seem special. It's just a spear, and it penetrates Rhaegal. It almost doesn't make sense to a certain extent, because we see how Danny's like, oh, my son has been rehabilitated because he had the pierced wings. And it's supposed to show time has lapsed because his wing is healed by the time we see this sea battle. And then we see him die. Now, his death, to me, it's kind of tragic because it's Jon's dragon for all intents and purposes. It's also named after Jon's father, which I think is kind of ironic. But the biggest thing about that scene, and we'll have to kind of backtrack a little bit after we discuss it, is the fact that Dany shows that she does not have military might, and she's not willing to do what is needed to win the war. She backed down.
And that was the thing. Like, she took off, left all of her men there open to death.
Right.
And I think this is why Grey Worm wasn't that harsh about when he was speaking to Missandei before the big battle. He wasn't really that distraught about saying, after this battle, we could just go back. And after we get done with her battle, her overall war, we can just go off. We don't have to protect the queen anymore. We can just do our own thing.
Right.
And he, because I think he understands there is no, like, true loyalty there. It's her direction or no direction.
Right.
And with that said, Grey Worm is put into a really weird position because the Mountain just killed Missandei.
Right. So it,
and just to preface this, they killed off like the best looking woman in the entire show.
I like how that's your qualm. But again, her death, she was in the crypt. I would have thought that maybe she dies in the crypt, but no, they save her only to kill her off here in this episode. It was predictable. You knew it was going to happen. And this kind of ties again into this season where it's just like, I don't know if Gott's running. The funny thing is, I think they have a lot of content that they could have made two seasons. They could have had one season really focusing in on the battle with the Whites and the Night King and develop that storyline. And then a subsequent final season where it is the battle for King's Landing and such. And we would have had a lot more development with John's love affair with Dany and the tensions in Winterfell and the conspiracies behind. But instead, we've condensed all of this into one season. There's not enough characters to develop. So they're kind of just put there, and there wasn't a shock. Like, it wasn't like a Red Wedding shock or a Ned execution shock. You just knew it was going to happen. Cersei is going to... It almost seemed like they killed her just to give some of the characters motivations to actually do something, because the motivation is lacking.
I actually, I think it's also different in that aspect though too. I also think that they give this episode, when they killed off Missandei, they actually gave not just motivation, but also showed that Tyrion, you're wrong. She is a monster.
Well, here's the thing. Tyrion knows that she is a monster, and he was doing it. He tried to appeal to her whatever shred of humanity she has left, but she clearly doesn't have anything left in the tank in that department. But I think he honestly knew it. He knew that what Cersei was going to do. His biggest thing is trying to, like all great campaign advisors, he is trying to make Dany look the hero in all of this. So there are certain things, there are certain games, ironically enough, right? Game of Thrones. There are certain games and political moves that you have to make. And in this case, we see Dany slipping into madness. She is becoming the Mad Queen. And I actually believe that it would be kind of a cool storyline if Tyrion kind of takes one out of his brother's playbook and becomes the Queenslayer and betrays her in that aspect for the good of the realm. But you see that in this episode. You see that there is rust starting to show up in the allegiances made on Dany's side, as well as you start to see what has been flirted with before in the past, but now is becoming more and more apparent, because again, we're running out of episodes, is that Dany is unstable. I've made this argument since day one, but now it's really taking steam, and it's the fact that she just doesn't, she's not doing this for the good of the people. She's masquerading her intention. She wants power. She wants to restore her family's glory, but it's not for the good of the people. It's selfish motive. It's selfish intentions, and she's losing her grip with reality. She's talking about, I think one of the greatest parts of the episode, and I think people were kind of disappointed with this episode because there's so much dialogue, but I actually, those to me are like my favorite episodes, is the dialogue and the political games between Tyrion and Viserys.
Yeah.
Where he's saying like, listen, I've seen rulers come and go. And he's actually developing a lot into a he kind of reminds me of Ra's al Ghul.
Like, where he's just like, I understand that y'all like want to protect her, but ultimately, if she's not good for the overall realm, I don't care if she dies.
Right. He has no allegiance to any leader. He has allegiance
to the people.
The people of Westeros, which is interesting because you never really got that sense, but I think they've done a good job of kind of developing him into this kind of behind-the-scenes hero.
But let's circle back on that.
He has no problem destabilizing
for the good. The first thing I want to say is, A, if you want to keep a secret, don't tell Sansa.
See, here's the thing. Everybody's been making a big deal about the whole secret, the secret stuff. First off, my boy Ned Stark, the only man able to keep a secret. Only man able to keep a secret. But the it has to come out. Like, and again, this is where the season feels so rushed. Which it's like, okay, how do we gain steam? So John in this episode is being praised and given accolade, and Dany's trying to swing favor her way. That's why she made what's it called, Robert Baratheon's bastard, into a lord to try to gain favor. But that was quickly again outshined by John's accolades. Don't get me wrong, from a military tactician standpoint, I don't know if he's fully proven himself in that aspect. But if you notice, to me, in this episode, the previous episode, and very Game of Thrones style, you have two opposing characters put in a similar situation. And you're looking to see, and you're measuring their honor based off of the actions that they take. Mm-hmm. John in The Longest Night was faced with virtual annihilation when he gets knocked off of Rhaegal and is charging headlong to the Night King, knowing full well that the Night King was raising the recently fallen. He still rushes headlong. It's basically, I will either die trying or I will succeed. That's it.
And he did the same thing with the dragon, though.
Correct.
When he was fighting the White Walker dragon,
he faces that fear.
Right before Arya had stabbed the Night King, he had stood up ready for his death. Like, he expected to die right there.
Okay, so good thing you brought that up. Hold on to that. Put a little pin on this. To go back, and then Dany in this episode is facing down what's left of the Greyjoy fleet, and she backs off. So similar situations. Now let's go back to The Longest Night, because, I mean, in the true fantasy movie mashup, what I would have liked to have seen. So in this episode, we see the Night in The Longest Night. You see the Night King, who is frozen, right, get a direct blast of fire and comes out unscathed. So we're like, oh, jaws drop, Targaryen. He's got to be a Targaryen to withstand the flames. How badass would it have been for Jon to stare Viserion in the face, take a full ice blast, and come out unscathed? So basically merging in the whole, because he is Targaryen and because he is Stark. So I am both winter, I am a true person of the North, and I am both a Targaryen, a fire wielder. That would have been so BA. Like, that would have... that was like a little untapped gold. I don't know if that's just, you know, completely departing off of George R. R. Martin's, like, thought and vision. But that would have been so cool if John could just take the fire blast, like that, or the ice blast.
But to go back to Tyrion and their conversation about Dany, and he had stated, he goes, she's paranoid now. Now that the secret's out, because he said, well, if 10 people know, the whole world knows now.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
But with that stated, he basically said, like, with John, Tyrion goes, Jon does not want it. He does not want it. And then the statement after was, but isn't it better to have somebody that does not want it, just get it?
Right.
Than have somebody that wants the power but doesn't actually deserve it?
Like, I feel so badly for Tyrion because he really represents the humanity in all of us. He put his belief in Dany, and he can see the writing on the wall, but he is hoping that she can be redeemed. And this season is full of redemption stories.
But I think he feels like with Dany, it's like his second chance of redeeming, like, Cersei. Because it's like, Cersei had a point in Game of Thrones where she could have actually, like turned around and not become the mad queen she has become.
Right. But Cersei could have also killed him. Yeah. She had him dead to rights with her archers on that wall in this episode, and she cannot... She cannot kill family, and it's an endearing Lannister quality. It's actually an endearing quality as in general, because we see the same again mirror images in this episode. It's the same thing with Jon. Dany basically tells him, "This is what you will do. You will not mention your bloodline, and if you do that, you get to be with me, and all will be well." And John chooses family. He releases that information. First off, it was a heartwarming moment just because Aya has always been... I mean, it's funny because Aya and John definitely had a brother, sister, maybe even cousin kind of relationship in that aspect. Sansa was very much like her mother Kat, kind of resented him. So for her to call him her brother and to see that family bond, only for it to be kind of turned on its axis, to be like, "Hey, I am a Stark, but I'm actually your elder, your superior, and I have a claim." I think this episode really sealed the deal with... If Jon lives, I think Jon becomes the wielder of the Iron Throne. I think the dragons dissipate, the Targaryens dissipate in that aspect. Sansa becomes the Warden of the North, and she backs Jon. I think she full-fledged loyalty and allegiance, and now we get to see her shine. Everything that she's learned from Littlefinger is going to play out. I don't think there's enough episodes to really do it justice, but her partnership with Tyrion, if she can turn him, which I think she has. I think the events of this episode helped do that, because Dany abandoned him on that ship. Like, she abandoned all of the Unsullied.
But it's not even just that. I think we also have to think about... There's two things that I think are going to happen from this episode. Since Jaime had left and went back to Cersei after his love affair... with his knight.
Lady Brienne. Kudos to the GOT crew for... we were joking around about this during the episode. You know, season one had a lot of sex, and it was flashy. And then as the series went on, it really was self-aware. It's like, okay, let me entice people with the HBO sex model. Once I give them that, and I see, and I show for the non-fantasy viewers, I show them, oh my gosh, like, this is kind of cool with the politics and the changing of hands, then I can kind of dissipate from the sex and violence aspect and just show you wielding and scheming and the occasional violence, occasional sex. This season, mirroring the first season, is saying, okay, let's go back to showing you sex, but let's see how cringy we can make it. Like, you're at the point where you're like, no, I don't want to see this anymore. because the whole Lady Brienne and Jaime, as much as I want to root for it and she helped redeem him, first, if you believe that Jaime is redeemed, Jaime said those things to Lady Brienne because he knew what was best for her. He knows what he needs to do. He knows his sister. This reminds me of what Tyrion told Jaime. You always knew she was like this, but you loved her so much that you looked aside. Jaime knows exactly what she's capable of. And he knows that the only way to stop all of this is to kill her. I think he's going there with one mission, and one mission alone, which is to slay Cersei.
And I think it goes one or two ways. I think Jaime either does get to kill Cersei throughout this battle, or Jaime gets killed by Cersei, and then Arya might finally get her lists completed, and Arya also kills Cersei.
Right, like everything's being served to us in like nice little bows. You know, we've mentioned this in the previous episode, brown eyes, blue eyes, green eye. Cersei, it's looking more and more like Cersei is the green eyes that is being referred to. Again, I think that it's looking more and more that it's either Jaime or Arya masquerading as Jaime, because she turns down something that the episode kind of glanced over really quickly, which was predictable, I think, in my opinion, is the whole Robert Baratheon's bastard. I can't even remember his name. Something like, I don't know, Kimchi, for all intents. Kimchi Baratheon is what I'm going to call him. Proposes to Arya. Or Aya, and she turns it down. She says, I'm not a lady. She joins up with Greggane. They're both heading to King's Landing. They both have a similar mission, which this is what I'm interested to see what they do with Jaime, because I think Jaime goes to King's Landing to kill her, but I do not believe that Jaime is the one that's going to kill her, just because Greggane is teamed up again with Aya, and I think it's set up for Greggane to fight the mountain, and Aya is going to, you know, murder Cersei. So it's very interesting. Bronn of the Blackwater showed up in this episode, flirted with an idea that we had come up with beforehand, which is whether or not he was going to actually kill Tyrion and Jaime. This is where I think, because of Rhaegal's demise and the cards that are being played, I think Bronn might show up again, and maybe this is how we get Jaime's death, because this episode leaves us with Bronn making a new deal, which is, you know, he'll be promised more. For some reason, I wanted to say Castilly Rock was almost promised to him, which is like the Lannister family's sake. But I have to go back, because I don't believe so. But something of high value was promised to him. Lordship, obviously, with property, was given to him. And he accepts that deal because he believes that, like all true opportunists, that the tide of battle has shifted towards Dany because she's got dragons. And then that was quickly squashed by the whole non-magical spears in large quantities and fast reloads, which don't make any sense. I think it breaks the convention of battle in that time period. Again, this it was a good episode.
Highgarden
was promised to him.
But the thing is I think there was a statement made by Bronn that I think he messes up on, and I think this is how actually Bronn dies. I do think he shows back up. I think he dies because he said, Jaime, you weren't good enough to beat me with two hands. How are you going to beat me with one? And because you're half the man you used to be.
Yeah.
And I think Jamie's the one that ends up killing him.
Yeah.
Because of that statement. And I think that's I think that's how Bronn's story ends. Never actually getting a castle.
Right. Like, it's like the opportunist who's always playing both sides eventually ends up with nothing.
Kind of like Littlefinger.
Yeah, it's a theme. It's a running theme in the show. That's why I think it's very unique with Virus, because Virus picked a side. Like, he seemed to be one of those characters. I'm not going to lie. Like, at the beginning of the show, I was way more a Littlefinger fan than I was Virus. I thought Virus was that guy that was always riding the line, but he developed into somebody that was actually more calculated and cunning than people gave him credit to.
Can I also say that I cannot wait to Cersei's hand gets murdered, and I hope it's really terrible.
Oh my gosh, yes. I cannot stand the man. Like, he, oh my gosh, he gives me PTSD from the, what is it? The not the Keepers of the Light, but that cult in the Sparrows, yeah, or whatever, the leader of the Sparrows. He borderlines that level of annoyingness to me. Talk about a man that is not qualified. Like, he personifies any resentment you ever had about somebody holding a rank superior to your own who is completely not qualified at all, just like kisses ass like no other. That is this man.
Well, we're coming to the end of the episode, and what are your predictions for next episode?
Two episodes left. I think we're gonna have another. I think we're gonna have another plot progression episode. I think there will be some shocking cards, or at least what the writers believe are going to be shocking cards. I think there are going to be some deaths in this next episode, but it's going to be like a wheeling and dealing type death, not a major battle. I think the Battle of King's Landing will be the last episode. Mm-hmm. Just because who wants...
But that also means the Battle of King's Landing will be probably only 30 minutes long.
It can't be...
Because they have to also show, like, what happens after.
Yeah, and that's, but the thing is, you can't really have a battle at King's Landing, because I think this next episode is going to show people turning against Dany, because the Battle of King's Landing potentially would involve the mass eradication of a lot of innocent people. I feel like next episode is going to be to stop the apocalypse.
I also think Cersei's fleet gets taken out by Theon's sister.
Oh yeah. She's coming back. She's coming back into this.
And she's gonna take all those ships out.
Yeah.
And she's the one that murders him.
Oh yes. And true, I mean,
She's gonna take out all the rest of the Greyjoy fleet.
What is dead can never die.
And she's going to be one that takes her knife and shoves it straight through his chest.
Oh, it'll be such a glorious moment too. But yeah, I think it's just gonna be another plot episode.
That might actually happen next episode.
It could. Everything has to kind of.
I think it evens the score power if you're taking out the dragon.
Correct.
I think it evens the score if that happens by taking out, like, those fleet catch them off guard again, and then boom, she's back.
Right. Before we end the episode, the thought came to my head, and we talked about this a couple of episodes ago. I kind of wish that Gott had employed something that could be detrimental to certain animes if not executed correctly. But if you've never watched animes, typically in between series, in order to develop more content and to really put detail into it, they come in, they put in these, like, either movies or these, like, micro series, like one or two episodes, just to kind of show the plot progression or time lapse in order to develop things that they can really digest into the season. If this was going to be the last season of Gott, and we almost waited, 2 years for this season, I kind of wish that they put in like a filler maybe HBO special movie where it touches on the war. Like, you really could have made a movie about the Longest Night. You could have made a movie about that. Showed, and then we get this little mini series movie again, and you see the demise of the Night King, and then we could spend these six episodes really digesting the true battle, the battle for the Iron Throne, which now is kind of rushed and muddled, having to do both in the same series.
I agree. But with that, guys, that's the end of this episode, speaking on the Game of Thrones episode 4. We'll be back next week with the update on the new episode.
See you guys.